Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Ted Fishman is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Ted's an old friend of ours and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Ted's a seasoned financial and economics journalist. His work has appeared in the New York Times, Money Magazine, Harper's, Worth Esquire, USA Today, and on and on. He's the was a former trader, I should say, and a member of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. He's the author of one of my favorite books, one of the most important books, I think, so far of the 21st century, China Inc. Ted Fishman, welcome back to the show.
So glad to be with you, Jim. Good morning.
It's good to have you back, Ted. And Ted, let's talk a little bit about China and give us a little bit of an update on you know, it's been a couple of 3 months since you've been here. Anything new happened over there that you think is dramatic enough that we should be paying attention to?
Well, there are some new things. One of the new things is an old story, just wrought a little bigger, and it's the size of their trade deficit with the United States.
Right.
and the growth of their economy. Their economy continues to steam ahead at higher rates than just about anybody predicts ever.
And did I see 11% the other day or something?
Yeah, you saw 11%, and it raised the usual alarm bells, which it always does,
yeah.
Which was, you know, we say, oh, is it sustainable? And the Chinese say, oh, is it sustainable? And they say they'll take whatever measures are necessary to cool it down. And they do take some measures, and some of them are a little peculiar. You know, we control investment by raising interest rates. They control investment by just saying you can't do it.
Right.
And limit lending from
that's
the bank.
Well, of course. And if it's done by government fiat, that's the way communists do it. Over here, bankers do it because it's the business thing to do.
Right, and the fiat doesn't always work because there are, a lot of the lending in China is unofficial lending. You know, the most dynamic sector of their economy is like the most dynamic sector of our economy, which is the one you talk about on your program all the time. It's small business, entrepreneurs, and they do not get funded through the banks in China. They get funded through local funding networks, and when you're in a local funding network and you see the economy is growing at 11%, it's like, hey, let's catch this while we can.
Right.
You don't slow down, you speed up.
They have a fairly primitive financial capital market, don't they, over there?
It is about as basic as you can get. For most of the businesses you encounter every day in China, the money is lent out of lending groups of people that you know. And if you don't pay the money back, then people come into your kitchen and sit there until you pay it back.
Do they break your kneecaps too, Joe?
It depends on what kind of network it is.
Some networks, yes, some no.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things for sure, and I've told the audience this before, and you've helped us with this, Ted, and that is that if there is a weak link over there, there's more than one, but the big 800-pound gorilla weak link in their whole system over there is their capital market, isn't it?
Yeah, and China's trying. You know, they're of two minds of this because they know that the world's big banks hold the kind of knowledge and expertise that China needs in order to progress. But at the very same time, like all countries, they want their banking industry to be a local Chinese industry. It's very important for their national identity and the Chinese feel for their national destiny to have powerful banks that are Chinese banks.
But you know, Ted, we now know that the Japanese miracle of the 70s and 80s was made to happen because of the propping up of the financial situation and financial markets in Japan by the government. We now know that's a very dysfunctional capital market in Japan. And as a result, they had a 15-year recession over there, and deflation was a problem over there. Could that happen to China?
You know, all of these scenarios are possible in China. I have a feeling that the Japanese situation is not a good analog to China's future.
Okay.
Because if China had a financial crisis, you know, because of the controls that Japan had on its banks and the mm-hmm. sophistication of its system, it could basically take what could have been a short-term depression and stretch it out into a long-term recession.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they decided to deal with their economic pain.
Rather than their pride prevented them from taking their medicine, didn't it?
That's right. And China, it would happen fast and strong.
So China doesn't have as much pride as the Japanese. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they don't have as much control to have that. Right?
Well, and maybe they're a little more pragmatic, too, than the Japanese. When we come back, we're going to talk with, Ted's going to talk to us, I should say, about wages in Japan. And dogs. We're going to talk about dogs, too. 20 tails. Stay with us.
They say the neon lights are bright on Broadway.
On Broadway.
The Drifters, ladies and gentlemen.
There's always magic in the air.
Classic group, classic song.
On Broadway.
Just like me.
When
my kids say I'm old, but I say I'm classic. 17 till I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Ted Fishman. My website, by the way, folks, is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you use it to your advantage. And don't forget to check out the blog, and don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and all the other things. Be sure to use all the other resources that are there. And we got a lot more to come. Just wait. It's going to be exciting. Ted is the author of China Inc. Ted, give us your website and tell us where the book's available, please.
The book should be available anywhere that you can buy a book. The website's www.chinainc-book.com. And anyone who wants to email me, it's tcfishman@gmail.com.
All right, so check that out, folks, and pick this book up, folks, China Inc. It will change the way you think about your marketplace, let alone the global marketplace. Ted, before we get into wages in China, I want to talk about a situation that was reported this last week in the newspapers. Many of the folks listening will have read it, and they kind of know where we're headed with this probably. And this is with regard to some dogs getting rabies in China, and the reaction to that situation by the Chinese, by the local governments in those parts of China. Ted, tell us what happens.
Well, over the last week, there have been some disturbing news reports. First of all, about incidents of rabies among humans, and secondly, the Chinese response to that, which is a traditional Chinese response, which is to head out into the communities that are afflicted and to kill the dogs in that community. When Chinese authorities decide to kill dogs, they do it in a very swift and brutal way. And these stories detail how officials have stopped people while they're walking their dogs or entered their houses
yeah.
while they're playing with their dogs and simply clubbed the animals to death in front of their owner.
I mean, this is a pet that you've got control of in your house or that you're on your leash, and they literally aren't capable of discriminating against you from the difference between your dog and a cur running around wild in the woods. And Ted, this is the year of the dog. 2006 is the year of the dog.
Yeah,
you
the
know,
dog is one of the nice zodiac signs there. And,
well, and you've got to figure if next year's the year of the rooster, those roosters are getting nervous.
Yeah, the roosters are getting quite
so, nervous. So, but seriously, what kind of a civilization reacts to, or I should say overreacts to something like, I mean, obviously rabies is a very serious thing. But this kind of overreaction, what kind of a civilization does that? And is that the kind of a civilization that we should really fear?
Well, it's a civilization that believes that man is on top of the natural world in every respect, and that all other living things are subordinate to it. Mao had this view that man could conquer nature and, as a result, cut down nearly every tree in China. attempted to kill most of the birds in China, which caused a huge pestilential problem. You see it even in these giant projects to build dams and rein in rivers. And, you know, it's a metaphysical view of the universe that has practical and often very dangerous and sad consequences.
And it's, and so what's sad, though, what's frightening a little, Ted, is that, you know, after all this time since Mao, that kind of an attitude is still pervasive.
Yeah, it is. Of course, you know, there are 2,000 rabies deaths in China every year. The country is still too poor to vaccinate dogs. The family pet, which is a dog, is a very, very new thing in China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might interest you that there are giant public meetings now in China about people who are telling the horror stories of what has happened to them and their pets, and there is some consciousness raising around this issue. But it has a long
could
way
that
to go.
Be could that one issue be an experiment for how this civilization gets control of itself?
It could be. You know, the government to date has been very reluctant to let any kind of public activism take root,
right.
Whether it's even around religions, around simple issues, local issues. And even if the pet issue were to spread from one town just to another town, then it gets the government's notice.
Right, right.
So, you know, in a way, it does. It's a measure of how willing the government is to listen to the people's needs on anything besides money.
It seems important to me, Ted, to have a constant awareness of this kind of an approach to the way the civilization is evolving in China, alongside our awareness of their economic growth and strength. Talk to us about that. Talk to us about wages in China. How do they compare to ours?
Well, you know, I did a calculation looking at Chinese wages to see why is the country so very, very attractive to the world's manufacturers. You know, the United States has a very efficient industrial infrastructure where costs are traditionally very low. But if you look at the lowest wages in the history of the United States, and I looked at two kinds. The first was, how much did it cost to hire a slave in the United States in the 1850s? You didn't pay a slave directly, but you could hire one from a slave owner.
Right.
And that was about five times more expensive than it cost to hire a young woman to sew garments in a Chinese factory today.
Today, wow.
Then I looked at Chinese railroad workers in the late 1860s who were building the transcontinental railroad.
In the United States.
And they were paid about six times what a Chinese worker is paid today in one of these cut-and-sew or manual factories where there's a lot of manual labor.
How should we take that information? How would you recommend that we absorb that information, Ted?
Well, one way is there's absolutely no way that we can compete with China on wages in this country.
No.
Not the way we can compete or ought to compete, because these are historically low by world standards in the history of humankind. What we have to do is build an economy which is the most efficient economic machine in the world.
And that does things that China isn't good at yet.
That's right.
That's another thing. Hold on to that thought, Ted. Ted Fishman, ladies and gentlemen, and I will be right back. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Ted Fishman. He's the author of China, Inc., one of the most important books so far in the 21st century. Ladies and gentlemen, I certainly encourage you to check it out and to get a copy of it, even if you go to the library and read it. Of course, when you do that, I got to warn you, when you go to the library, you're going to want your own copy. And it's available wherever books are sold, right, Ted?
That's right.
China, Inc., Ted, let's talk some more about this wages thing. You've proven to us, basically, there is nothing we can do from a political standpoint. We're not going to get China to raise their wages. We're not going to be able to compete on price on wages here. We've got to realize that there are some things that other people can do less expensively than we can, and let them do those things, and we do the things that we're good at. What do you think?
I agree with that completely. And our job as a society is to make sure we have a skill set that the rest of the world cannot match. Because if we're doing anything that can be done in another part of the world, it will move to a low-wage part of the world.
See, and it seems to me, Ted, that America needs to think like a small business. And I'll give you an example. I tell small business owners, don't try to compete with Walmart. They can sell things cheaper than you can buy them. So don't get into that price war with them. Only serve the people that you can serve and do a really good job with. And so to me, China and countries like China, India perhaps too, Indonesia, Malaysia, those places are America's Walmart. What do you think?
I think that's a really good analogy. I mean, most small businesses, if they're successful, begin with an idea on how to do something differently. And this is where the real dynamism of our economy goes. As you know, small business is also the realm of high technology, of innovative solutions.
55% of all innovations in America come from small businesses.
And when you use small business as a model for the rest of the economy, what you're doing is you're telling us to say, find a way to take cost out of the system in an innovative way, in a way that no one else can match. Find
right.
a way to serve it in a way that no one else can match. And that means, right now, what I've been thinking a lot about is, you know, we know that the American manufacturing sector is losing jobs. The reason it's losing jobs is not just because they're getting exported, but because factories are becoming more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can match American factories where in the places where we're strong. We need to think of our whole country as a place that is the most efficient, where goods can move from one place to another in the most efficient way with the best roads, the best telecom that matches up with those transport systems.
You think infrastructure is our biggest, one of the most important things we need to focus on right now, don't you?
We have an interstate highway that was built in a world that did not rely on global trade, and now 30% of our GDP comes from global trade. We have to rethink the way we're moving things around.
What does that mean, rethink? What does that sound like?
Well, to me, there's all kinds of things. One is, should the highways be an entirely public enterprise, or should that be a place where businesses can get involved, including small businesses?
To build toll roads, you mean?
To build toll roads, to monitor the traffic of goods, for innovative solutions on the way things are certified for customs and tax inspection. There's all kinds of opportunities to serve the movement of goods. And you know, it's an industry that's just begun to realize, you know, that there's a role for advanced technology in it, and there's a role for innovative solutions and how to maximize that.
What about maglev? Magnetic levitation railroads. I just think that's the coolest idea. Why doesn't that work?
You know, it does work. You know, China of course has built the world's best
right?
maglev trains.
Why doesn't it work in America?
Yeah, I don't know why it works in America. I wonder sometimes whether it's a security issue, whether we want these very high-speed vehicles moving across the ground, or whether we think that they're too vulnerable.
What's the difference in that and an airplane? You know, I don't know. But I got 1 minute, Ted. What's your last thought for us on infrastructure?
Well, my last thought is that you know, Congress is now considering what the United States should do with its highway systems. I would say that this is the most important debate. It seems like a national debate, but it's a very, very local debate. Local communities depend on how things get to and out of those, and every business owner should be looking carefully at how this unfolds.
And should we? And is the answer more and better interstates?
It's not only that, it's warehousing, trucking, what kind of aviation.
Does it include telecom?
Yeah, absolutely, because everything that moves across the world now is tracked in some way that links it to a computer every inch of the way.
And not only that, but I don't know how you could have an infrastructure conversation about, you know, a physical like a highway or a railroad without saying, okay, how is telecommunications going to change the need for that over the next 50 years?
Well, they play off one another, absolutely.
Yeah. Ted, give us your website again, please.
www.chinainc-book.com.
Thanks, Ted, for being here. Good job today. Good information. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Jim. Enjoyed it.
Quick break. Actually, I'll be back after the news. I'm Jim Blassingame. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.